Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the Windward Fail Music Speaks Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Windward Fail Music Speaks Podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. I am your professional handicapped host, James Cox, and I have another great interviewers. So we got Mr. Joseph Stamm and David Alford, like Batman, like we just I love Batman. I'm so sorry I had to bring that up, you know. But they are both co-directors of a movie called 13 for the Elephant, coming out March 28th, which is in a couple of days. So I think I'm going to release this either today or tomorrow just to get your name out and everything. So, Joseph and David, how are you doing today, my friends?
We're doing well. Thank you for having us.
Great. Yes, sir. So when I got the email saying to that y'all wanted to come on, I'm like, okay, well, they're actors, and I love actors, and David, I just found out that you did some. You're in the Christian music scene too.
I worked in Christian radio for about 10 years, and right. And was very involved in it with that, and that was a pretty exciting time.
Yeah. But it said you worked in Christian music and talk radio. Okay, so what music did you or like, do you have any music you can listen to?
I was a program director for a Christian radio station for about 6 years, and my job was to select the music for the station and then chart the music and get feedback from the audience.
Nice. Well, I guess that was like fun and a little bit like daunting too, right?
It's a big responsibility. If the ratings go bad, it was all my fault.
Yes.
If the ratings were good, it was my boss's. It was my boss's privilege to do that.
So there was no type of raise coming for you, right?
I just got to keep my job. That was the big bonus I got.
Hey, man. Everybody needs jobs, right? So, Joseph, were you any kind of musician? Do you play instruments here and there, or do you just...
I really don't. I'm really not musically gifted, and you know what? I really admire people who are. That's something that I've always said, that if I could have another artistic talent, I would want it to be in music, because I admire it so much, the way that music can move people in a way that no other art form can. Mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about film and music, you know, that's when things get really exciting. A film doesn't come together until the score is there. I mean, it was interesting for Searching for the Elephant. We had talked about doing it without music for a little while. But the film really didn't take on a life of its own, I don't know. There's something that music does that, you know, in film you want to make sure that you don't use it to project feelings too much, but it moves people in a very subconscious way that, it's a very powerful tool that we had to dip into.
Yeah. Yeah, I find the best part of the movie is the music, you know, because without music, like you said, there, I mean, the movie just wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, it's the scoring that really makes a difference.
Yeah.
You see a scene without the scoring underneath it, and then you put the scoring in it, you don't quite realize the impact it has on you until you hear it without it. And then you put it in, you're like, wow, the feelings I'm feeling right now about these characters or about the scene, the tone it sets in the scene is all about the underscoring. And once that's put in there, it puts a whole different subconscious layer that, like Joe said, taps into people's feelings and emotions in a way they can't quite put a finger on.
Right.
And it's so nice when you're in the editing room and you're thinking, oh, there's something missing. I don't know. The sequence doesn't quite work. And then the composer comes in there and then you're like, oh, that's what it was. Okay, thank goodness. And they just come in there. It's just, it's a godsend. And you're just so glad because it just kind of ties the entire sequence together.
Right. So was there a scene in the film particularly that you just couldn't find the song to like grasp it together? And he's like, oh man, I can't find the song, you know. But
fortunately, we had an editor that did that for us. And so he was able to provide, and he created a lot of soundscapes where he'd combine some sounds together to kind of create a feeling or an atmosphere. But there was one particular very tender moment in which there are two, Joseph's character and an actress named Libby Smallbone, who was playing opposite him, are having a really intimate moment sitting on the back of a truck, and they're talking together and kind of sharing their lives. And the scoring didn't quite, that the rest of the film had, didn't quite work the same way. And our editor had found a piece of music from another film that had been, I guess the music wasn't used in the other film, or they didn't have a part.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Yes. So
he asked those people, he said, hey, remember that sequence of music we did not use in our film? It's going to be perfect in this film. Can I use it? And he got permission from them to use it. And this beautiful, fully orchestrated underscoring sweeps up underneath this scene. It adds this layer of intimacy to this conversation that's just so heartfelt and so touching. And it was just something that was sampled from another producer who gave us permission to use it.
You know what's funny in the way that God works with those things as well? David mentioned one of the actresses, Libby Smallbone. So her siblings are, if you've heard of the band For King and Country and Rebecca St. James, that's all her family. And so she was acting in our film. We didn't realize her connections until after she was in the film. But then on set, her dad was talking to us and kind of pitching her music and everything as we're there on set. And that's how we found our end credit scene, our end credit song, rather, is through her. We ended up stumbling upon her, and she has just this great voice and this great song that was perfect for the end of our film. And so we just went and used that as an original piece for the end of the film. So that was kind of a neat thing that just happened there on set that we didn't expect.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, the movie is called Searching for the Elephant, for anybody who missed it, like I talked about the movie. And it's a film about second chances, faith, and family, you know. Now, from what I read in the synopsis, it's a veteran that comes back. And he is like kind of rekindling like past emotions. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a story about a gentleman who's in his 60s, and he was part of the Vietnam War. Okay. And he was traumatized by a very difficult situation that happened in that war.
Yeah.
And when he came back, he had trouble reconnecting with his family. And and there was a lot of barriers between him and the people around him. And then Joseph's character that he plays is the grandson, who is also struggling with the death of his father and has trouble connecting with people as well, and has kind of slipped into addiction as a way of coping with that. And then both men have kind of pushed everyone out of their lives, and they're both living in kind of isolated towers all by themselves. Right. And through a series of circumstances, the two men find that they're going to have to live together in a house, and that the grandson is on house arrest and cannot leave. And the grandfather doesn't want him there.
So they're forced
together. Yeah, they are forced to live together, even though they don't like each other, they don't know each other, and they don't want to know each other. And so it's almost comical, the things that they go through trying to, you know, avoid each other and not get closer. But in doing so, they are forced to see each other and see themselves within each other. And through a series of wild circumstances and hoodlums from the past, they go through some dangers and get a chance to open up again to people, which I think a lot of people need to do in this day and age. I think people I think people are isolated. It's so easy to stay at home and not ever go out. Or you've got everything you need there at your door. You know, so it's easy when you're upset or hurt to just back away and shut the world out. And that's kind of what this movie's about.
Well, I guess I'm kind of guilty of that too, because I do like I love people. I like Outback Steakhouse, but sometimes I'm like, I don't want to talk to anybody today. You can, you know, go here and go there and get out of my way. I don't want to do nothing, you know. So.
And it's so easy to do now. It's so easy to isolate yourself. And that's what these two people have done. And they've numbed themselves in these different ways. My character through his drug addiction. And, you know, Griff, the person who plays my grandfather, through his cutting people out and his isolation. Yeah.
Right, yeah. But correct me if I'm wrong, but music plays an important part of the movie still, like we said before, because when I listen to, when I get in a big fight with my sister or something, you know, anybody, you know, there's some kind of musical pieces that I listen to, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to give her a second chance because this music is talking to me. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? Yeah, I would say for me as an actor, the music was really a big part of the character building process for me, to kind of get into Jason and everything like that. And we were just talking about the way that music affects you and changes you, and it's true, you process things. Through music, things that are going on in your life, at least I have always turned to music as a way to emotionally process, like you're talking about. And so what's interesting is I think Jason, that character does the same thing. And so I had a playlist for him probably of about like 300 songs. That like when I listened to that, that really helped me get into his headspace and really know where he was coming from. And, you know, it was a tough character to stay in. And I was kind of staying in it all day when we were shooting 12-hour days. And so I would like go to set and I would listen to these songs and kind of get into character as I went. And then when I was leaving set, I would like listen to like the Jason songs. And then I'd slowly start listening to like more Joseph songs to kind of like get out of character. Yeah. So music was definitely a huge part of just like the character building process and who Jason was.
So, Joseph, you are 21 as of right now, correct? Or okay, yeah.
Yes, okay. Yeah, I'll be 22 next month.
Okay, so I have a question for both of you, and I figured that David could answer this a little bit better than you can, only because he's lived longer like me. I'm 45, so I'm near his age, you know. But I always ask the guests on which band would they prefer, this one or this one, okay? So... David, I'm going to start with you first because we're both like we're really close together in age, okay?
Yeah.
So do you prefer, this is really hard, do you prefer the Beatles or Rolling Stones? And so which one, why?
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah. I'm really more Beatles. I think their mix of melodies, harmonies, and musical structure, I find that infinitely more fascinating than kind of the rocks. Nothing against the Stones are obviously very talented.
But yeah.
I just, that music connects to me. I get melancholy when they get melancholy. I get happy when they get happy. Yeah. And I feel it. It taps into my emotional array more so than Rolling Stones does. Rolling Stones is a fun jam, but the Beatles have something subconscious going on that I'm like, it just taps into your subconscious in a way that you don't even know what they're talking about half the time. And it doesn't even matter. You're just with the music the whole way through. Yeah. So I'm definitely a Beatles man in that regard. But you can ask Joseph these questions. He's an old soul when it comes to
music. Oh, great. Yeah, because sometimes...
If you look at his playlist, it's like older than mine. I don't know. From
generations
I've never heard of.
Well, no, because see, the reason why I said that is these kids nowadays listen to rap, and I can't stand that enough stuff. Now, you know? So that's why I, you know... But yeah, Joseph, Beatles or Rolling Stones?
I like all types of music. I have to say, I've listened to a lot more Beatles. So I'm gonna be biased that way.
Yeah, please do.
And so maybe it's because I'm not as educated on the Rolling Stones. I've only heard a few of their songs. But I love the Beatles. I think Hey Jude was probably the first one I ever listened to by them. And listened to it with like my brothers on a road trip, and it was just kind of the perfect like introduction to the Beatles. It was I love
Well, can you see how much I love the Beatles? I got this one, and
Oh,
I got this one, dude.
look at that. He's equipped. He's got it all right there, ready to go.
Okay, David, I guess we picked the right one.
If the interview had been cut off, if we had said Rolling
Stones,
it's
that means
like
we get to keep going.
delete this episode.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes.
All right, James, I got a question for you though. I got a music
Yes,
question for
sir.
you.
Yes,
All right, go
sir.
back to high school. What was big for you in high school? Who was the big group when you were in high school?
Metallica.
Metallica.
Metallica, dude. I drove my mom insane with that band. Every waking moment I got up, I listened to Metallica. On the way back to school, I listened. She was like, "No, you're not listening to the." I'm like, "Okay, well, yeah." Because it's her fault, though. It's her fault because she bought my first Metallica cassette tape. But I'm not sure. Yeah, Joe. Yeah, this
Oh, he's
is.
got it
But yeah. So it's her fault. So thank you, Mom, for introducing me to heavy metal.
there. That's great. That's great.
Mom's like great for some things, but I think that came back on her, you know. So speaking of that. What was each of your first CD or cassette?
Oh goodness, cassette was a long time ago. Joseph
I
doesn't know
know, I
what
know.
cassette is. I don't know
Yeah,
if he's even seen
because
it.
I was born in 1980, but yeah.
Hey, I collect vinyls now. I bought
Dude,
my first
I got a
vinyl.
whole case back here, but yeah, full of vinyl, yeah.
That's great. That's great.
First cassette. Oh my goodness. This was a long time ago. Because I remember, James, you might not be old enough. I remember I used to get 8-track tapes. I mean, I was started off when I was first old enough to start listening to music. I
My
had
dad.
8-track tapes, and I would have one of Ray Stevens, who did all the comedy songs, do like Ahab the Arab, and all these
Guitar
probably
Man, guitar,
inappropriate songs now.
Right, yeah, oh yeah,
very
big time,
popular.
yeah.
He was very popular. And they had all these comic songs that he would have bouncy songs. I listened to Ray Stevens as a kid on my 8-track tape. And I know everyone is like going, some of the kids are going, well, I have no idea what that is. I don't know what you're talking about. My grandkids, I took them to a record store one time and I showed them a record on the in the on the used bookstore. They said, Opa, that's the biggest CD I've ever
Oh,
seen.
yeah, no. It does look like a big CD. You're right. It's awesome.
I'd have to say that my first CD, because I was CD era. With I think it was actually a Stephen Curtis Chapman CD.
Nice,
I think
nice.
was my first one. I used to go and dress up. I used to put on concerts for my family and for my parents and stuff. I'd grab the guitar and I'd put that CD in and I'd jam out
Right,
and give them a
yes.
show. Yeah,
Nice,
so.
yeah. Well, my first cassette was Alabama, Southern Star. And I'm sure David is a big Alabama fan, just like I am. My first CD it was AC/DC Live. I loved it. I don't have that anymore. I wish to God I found it, you know. But, oh well, but I can buy it down on like vinyl records. So yeah, it's all good. So here's a question for both of y'all, or well, for, yeah, for both of y'all, okay. So I know that when writing this movie, y'all looked at several with music, you know. Y'all looked at several opportunities, and did y'all go outside and listen to any kind of other movie soundtracks to get an idea of what this
Yeah, actually we did. Yeah,
Yeah, that's a good question.
that's a really good question. Our previous movies that we'd done before, we had a composer who created original music. So he would read the script and he'd come up with some ideas. He'd lay us some strings out and he'd say, "Here's some ideas for music that I think will fit characters." And he would develop themes that would follow the main characters. He'd just name it after the characters, call it, the character's name and their theme. and he would generate about four or five different songs, and we would use them kind of intermittently throughout the film, and that's how we'd come up with the score of the film. Yeah. For Searching for the Elephant, it was a little bit different in that it's the first time we didn't work with a composer. The film package was basically developed by the editor through editing, and so we had a lot less say in it. But in those other opportunities, we'd actually listen to the song and go, yes, this actually captures the character that we're looking for. It was a really kind of cool thing because one of our movies is called Found, and the main character that Joseph played in that film too was called, his name was Finch. And so there's a song called Finch's Theme that our composer had written for him. And it's this beautiful violin, because he's an Appalachian character, so this beautiful violin, this beautiful Appalachian ring to it. It just felt like you were sitting in the mountains watching the trees go by. You know, just you just had this beautiful film to it. And later that next year, our friend composed a song for a symphony, for the Symphony of the Mountains here in our region. And so the symphony played Finch's theme in one of their concerts. And Joseph and I got to go and sit down in the auditorium and listen to an 80-piece orchestra play a song from our film in the most glorious way you could imagine. And it was just so powerful to hear that our little movie character and his song being just fleshed out by these, I don't know, it was just kind of a surreal experience. Joseph was there too, and it was his character. So I'm sure it meant something even more for him.
It was pretty incredible. Yeah, I don't quite know how to put the words to that moment, but it was pretty amazing to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so coming up with music for films, for this one, we were looking for a style and sort of a feel, because it was very, I don't know, ethereal. Is that the right word for it, Joseph? An ethereal style of music?
Yeah. And we wanted it very ethereal, but then also very rough and gruff. You know, we wanted it to feel like kicking stones, you know, throwing a stone down a dirt road sort of a thing. And so we looked at a lot of other movie soundtracks, a lot of other Westerns, especially a lot of other neo-Westerns for kind of inspiration of what we were looking at. And we kind of pulled from these different films and gave our editor a bunch of different references for the kind of, and he kind of got an idea for the scope of what we were looking at. And from there, he really took it. Like, he took it and ran with it. I mean, we gave him the first kind of jumping off point. But after that, it was just a matter of us just saying, yes, no, a little bit more there, a little bit less there, you know. Because that's the thing with music, it is so powerful. And so you want to use it sparingly. You want to be careful not to overuse it and play your hand a little bit too much. And then in some of the more sentimental moments, sometimes you just need to let that breathe and not add music and kind of on top of it. But then other moments that are really small, they mean so much more when you just have the littlest hint of music in there, and all of a sudden it kind of opens up this other world of emotion that you didn't see there before.
I think what's different is we use music to build tension this time too. That's
true.
Done. Our music had been so melodic in the other films, and this time often the music itself would help add to the suspense or the tension of a scene. Just kind of by using minor keys and sound effects and tones in certain rhythm.
And sometimes there's just like minutes at a time where it's just a humming. It's just a humming in the background that you may barely notice, but it's just that sustained sort of sound that's just kind of keeping you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
I was going to ask you, so silence is more provoking than words sometimes, or half the time, you know. But I was asking you, when do you know a scene needs music or just needs pure silence? And I think you'll answer that for me.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough call to make. Sometimes you've got a scene, you think, because often we'll assemble the scenes first with the actors and their dialogue and what they're doing. And then we'll have to make the decision, is this enough? Or does it need that underscoring underneath it? And Joseph and I don't always agree, believe it or not. we sometimes disagree whether music should be there or not. And so the attitude is often, prove it to me. And so,
yeah, so we'll do it first and we'll argue later. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Prove to me this is better. And so we'd find the music and put it in and listen to it and go, oh, see, this is making me feel what I need to feel. Mm-hmm. And or sometimes the music comes in and goes, you know what, this is too much. It's interfering with what we're trying to do here.
Right.
And silence is better. But more often than not, I find that music really adds another layer to what's happening.
And the great thing is that no matter how much we argue about that, you know, at the end of the day, when the right choice is in front of us, you know, and when it feels right, we both recognize it. And, right. and you know, we're able to... Gotta tip our hat to the other person and go, all right, you're right. Yeah.
We apologize for the names we called each other and that thing.
Which is always great, Brotherly
what
love.
What happens in the editing room stays in the editing
there
room.
There you go. This is a question for Joe, and I think I can relate this question from David. David mentioned Finch in the movie Found, and you played Jamie in Cross Purposes, right? So,
yes, that's right.
When you are getting ready for those roles, the do you listen to different music from Finch's point of view to Jamie's point of view, or are they sometimes kind of like entwined, like to listen to the same stuff?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah. For me, I would only listen to what the characters would listen to. So for Jason, okay. I was talking about for him, he had this music that he would go to get out a lot of his emotions. A lot of the emotions he's dealing with are very rageful, hurt, intense emotions. So where he goes to is like screamo, hard rock music. So that's what I was listening to. Personally, not my favorite. That's my rap music. Like usually, but I actually found what people find attractive about that music, you know, through Jason's eyes, because I was able to see that this is the way that he exercises these demons and all this rage and all this hurt that he has in him. This is a way that for him to alleviate some of that through this music. And so, that was really important. So even though that's music that I would never listen to myself for fun, I found what he found attractive about it, and that helped me get into his headspace. And so for the other characters, I would say for Finch, you know, he grew up on this mountain alone pretty much, except for with his grandparents, until he's like kind of thrust into this modern world. For me, it was actually trying to forget what it's like to have access to music and have access to all this sound and all this technology and everything that we have. You know, he grew up like, you know, very off the grid. And so for me, that was just a process of trying to like go out into, you know, the woods and go camping and things like that, and really sit in the silence and just the silence of nature and God's music, I guess, of what the wind and the leaves and the water and, you know, and really forget what it's like to have all that access to all of those sounds. So it was a very different process with him.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised, James, how much music plays in writing as well. Often before I sit down to write, especially if I'm trying to get into like Finch's world, is I'll sit down and listen to several songs that put me in the right frame of mind before I even start writing a word on the computer. Even if I'm coming to edit or do something like that, I'll often use music as a place of kind of pushing the outside world away and trying to find the world of the character. Instrumental music is really helpful too. I know we listen to a lot of the soundtrack from the movie Cherry has some beautiful instrumental music that kind of just drifts through this esoteric kind of place. And there's just something very soothing about it that just closes the world out and slows your mind down and allows you to kind of reach into your imagination a lot more accessibly. And so I often, if I find myself not in the right place to write, I'll often listen to some songs first and just kind of use that to get me going. I think Joe does the same thing.
Yeah, something instrumental and hypnotic almost can kind of put you in this space, this creative space. And I also use that, yeah, that's a huge part of my writing now is figuring out what the film sounds like when I'm putting it together. And a lot of times when I'm stuck on a sequence and I don't quite know how to do this and I don't quite know how to make it work, you know, I'll just go through and put some music on that I think relates to the film or I could see being in the film. And then all of a sudden, all these images start flooding through my head and it's the sequence kind of works itself out.
You know, what's interesting too is, you know, Aaron Sorkin, who's a tremendous film and TV writer, one of the best screenplay writers out there, he says that he uses music in a powerful way too, because he gives his character each an instrument of which their voice sounds like. So if you've got a high-pitched piccolo with teeny tiny notes that trill all the way through it, if that's the musical instrument he's going to assign to one of his characters, he's going to give it to maybe a female character that has a high-pitched voice and talks constantly. And he may give another instrument to one of his, you know, bigger, heavier set male characters, and it's like the tuba. It just plays a big note every once in a while. And when he writes dialogue, he writes it like an orchestra score. He'll have the high-pitched t-t-t-t-t notes and then the big bass notes. And so it's just words dropped in that rhythm and that sound, and that his scenes often mimic music in the way that every character has a different sound that kind of contributes to this overall cacophony that is his scene. And it's a really interesting way to think about writing, but it's always impacted me. I've tried writing some scenes where I've assigned musical instruments to specific characters, and I find myself choosing their words and their sentence structure in a very specific way that matches that instrument. And everyone has their own unique sound in a scene. It's really pretty fascinating.
Well, I wish I had that power of creating like music from nowhere. You know, I can't sing. I cannot sing. I cannot write good songs. You know, it's, but I get to talk about it. You know, that's my goal. You know, so.
Yep, we gotta have appreciators. That's for sure.
There you go. Yes, and good critics. You know, good critics too. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I admire music so much, and I admire what people can do, and as I benefit from it, you know, just like you do as an admirer, and then also as a filmmaker, I benefit from it so much for my films, because there's a lot of sequences that wouldn't be half of what they are if it wasn't for music. And so, even though I'm not gifted in that way, I admire it and appreciate it a lot.
All right. So I got three more questions for you. I have one easy question and two hard questions.
Okay. Give me the easy one and Joseph the hard ones.
Hey.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
All good.
The easy one. Okay, so easy one.
He's gonna do it, Joseph. You're in trouble.
No.
No, yeah, I just forgot the easy question. Yeah,
See, I'm off the hook altogether.
Right, yeah, so you're good to go. No, but okay, so why don't we do the hard question? And this is for both you, so David, you can't back out now, okay? All right, so,
Okay.
yeah, all right, so of course, you all know we have a Mount Rushmore in America. So there's four heads on Mount Rushmore, okay? What are both y'all's favorite four bands ever made? If you only have four.
Four bands.
And remember, y'all are gonna be mad at me afterwards, because as soon as you hang up with me now, you're like, man, I should have said this one, you know. It always happens. It always happens, you know.
I
Yeah.
can see how that would happen.
But
Wow, it's a tough one.
yeah.
Four bands only.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, why don't we start with Joseph first? Because
Oh,
I know, dude. Yeah.
Oh,
Put you on the
that's
spot. Yeah. I got you,
mean.
David.
Okay. Well, I'll give my first two, and then I'm gonna throw it over to David because I'm still working on them.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
All
That's
right.
that's fair, David, right?
So
That's fair.
one, I will say one of them, and not just to make James happy, I'll say the
There you go.
Beatles.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Beatles, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And then just a personal favorite of mine, one I've been listening to a lot that I feel like musically Really like his music, and then poetically, just really like his poetry. Is Hozier. I really like his
Oh,
music as well.
yes, love his music. Yeah.
Yeah,
Now,
and so
he's not technically a band. So are we
he
allowed
has
to
a
think about
band.
not bands? Do we have to think with bands?
Artists are
What's
bands. Artists, bands, and singers,
There
it
we
doesn't
go.
matter.
Okay, I'm
Okay,
good.
so we can go artists. Okay,
It's
I'm with you.
good. Yeah,
Okay.
this is y'all's network where you can say anything you want to. It's you
Oh,
know.
good. Okay.
Okay.
All right, so for I'll give Joseph a chance to think a little bit. So I'll come up with two then. So the first one I come up with is U2. When I'm growing up, U2 was hitting its prime, and it was the music of my teenage years. And so it had Joshua Tree was right when I was graduating high school, right there in senior high school. And the influence of that album on me and all my friends, and kind of the soundtrack of our graduating school year, that was the album that kind of shaped it all. I just felt like there was something magical about that thing. It was in a place that no other group had been in.
So when you say that, do you remember your graduation song?
Oh, it was like something cheesy that our class picked up.
Yeah,
I don't even know what it was.
mine was very cheesy. Mine was Graduation by Vitamin C. Here we are now. We're together. It's like y'all could come up with a better song than that. Y'all could ask me, man.
I think that's just like that's what friends are for, or something really smart. That song, it was every class for like 10 years picking a song. We were very unoriginal in that way. That was
So were we, and I graduated in '99, with Limbiskit and this and that, and but
And then the
Vitamin
other one
C.
that really kind of shaped music from my childhood was Prince and the Revolution, because their music was so different. It was so off the charts, wild and weird, but in such an artistically challenging way that I think it pushed everyone to try harder. I guess these bands are ones that set standards in such a way that other artists just tried to be them, and you could kind of see the music industry kind of shift their direction, and everyone tries to kind of mimic what they're doing. When an artist is that big and makes that kind of an impact, I'm just totally blown away by that.
Prince and especially Michael Jackson had influence over still do, I mean they're still inspiring artists today, even though they both passed. So that's a good
All right, Joe, back to
two
you,
picks.
bud.
Back to Joseph with his two, and then back to you, David, for your other
Oh, okay,
two.
I'm still going, yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, one that just means a lot to me, that I grew up listening to with my brothers, and kind of saw their progression from when they were just making music, like in their living room sort of thing, to now doing, arena shows and everything. So being with a band that long kind of means a lot. Is 21 Pilots. That they're a band that I've just followed for a long time since I was very young. And they're still going, and just it's a just a two person band, but they put a lot of heart and soul and blood, sweat, and tears into their art and what they do, and they kind of stay in their own lane and do their own thing adjacent to the music industry, and I kind of appreciate that, and they're just they've been fun to follow, I think, for a good portion of my life. So
Isn't that like
they
oxymoron? There are two people, but they're 21 pilots. Where's the other 20?
Yeah.
It's like the oxymoron right there for you.
Did
you ever figure out where that name came from? Does anyone even know that?
I think it's from a poem, I believe. But I don't remember the meaning anymore. So yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
But
You got one more.
One more. So,
All right, you do one more, David. Back to you, and then I'll
He
get.
doesn't know, man.
All right, so I'm going to go back to, I spent years in working at Christian radio station, and I grew up as a teenager listening to Christian music. And at the time I was listening to it was really the era where Christian music was going through a huge change. It was there was a lot it had been gospel music had been around for forever, but contemporary Christian music, or kind of a Christian pop music, was kind of a new emerging thing. And so as a kid, it was happening in the years that I was really listening to music. And there was a few groups that really kind of shifted everything for everybody. And DC Talk is one of those groups.
Yes.
Those guys are still around. They're all solo artists now, I think. But that trio redefined what Christian music could be. Right. And it redefined the quality of what Christian music could be. And I think they kind of shocked the world when they put out an album that was so good that people who didn't even listen to Christian music thought it was quite good.
Right.
And so for the Christians who had not been treated to that caliber of music or that style of music for their whole life, we just thought we were in hog heaven, so to speak. Mm. And so I think when Jesus Freak came out and the albums that came up after that, it renewed my faith that Christian music could not only be artistically challenging and spiritually encouraging at the same time, but it could make you think and feel in a way that it hadn't really tried to before. So that group really made a huge impact in my teenage years growing up. And it was fun because I got to actually meet them and interview them at the radio station where I was working at when they came through town. And it was really fun to get to, we were all about the same age, I think, at the time. Yeah, so it was fun to sit down and talk with these guys. And so that made a huge impact. And of course, another artist, Amy Grant, who's everyone knows now, but at the time she was only a gospel artist. We only knew her in our thing.
Yeah.
But when she had a crossover hit and kind of suddenly become a top 40 artist, and all of a sudden the whole music industry shifted because all these record companies were like, wait a minute, I think there's money in them there are hills. And they started pouring in, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars into the gospel music industry. And all of a sudden, this little mom and pop thing that where all the records were made in people's garages, all of a sudden, these really nice, really highly produced with professional caliber musicians and producers, all of a sudden, Christian music kicked up to this whole nother level of professionalism and exciting music. And being a part of it and being at the radio station and working with people at that time and talking to the artists, it was just an exciting time to be in Christian music. So for me, that was a real big kickback. I really enjoyed all that.
I will say this, I was looking at the Christian music industry, and lo and behold, I found out that is the, I don't know how to word, it's the darkest place to be in the industry, you know. It's more dark than metal or rock music, you know. I don't know, you know. But I find it very odd that In a genre where you talk about Jesus and God, it becomes like a darker, momentary thing, which I find kind of odd and interesting at the same time.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. All right, Joseph, you have one more, buddy.
One more.
Yeah. So I would say a band that to me I relate to a lot and appreciate because they're very cinematic is the Lumineers. Their album 3 is a really interesting album, and they're very narratively driven. Their storytelling is really interesting. That one particularly is about these three different people. It's kind of about generational trauma. It's about a family at three different stages of their life, and so it's really interesting. And the way that they shape the story and the characters through the songs are really fascinating. So I think they're really great. And then I would also just throw in there, just because as a reference, even though I've said enough, Toby Mac, I'm just really, just to play off of what you said, David, I'm just so impressed with the way that he's changed. he keeps changing.
And by that, he's old. Yes.
but he's changed his sound with the time.
Yeah.
Like time and time again, every time there's a new sound, he's on the new wave of it. A lot of times, most of the time, he can ride that wave. There's sometimes where it hasn't worked out as well for him, but he tries and he gives it a good go. And most of the time, he's successful. And you honestly can't find artists who have changed with the times as well as Toby Mac.
No, not at all. Yeah, for sure.
Well, and I think that's part of it is because as an artist, your audience that you connected with in the teen years, which is when most of us form our musical tastes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That audience is the group that tends to stay with you. And as we all get older together, our taste in music slightly changes. So you'll find an artist doing one thing early in their career and kind of transitioning into another sound later in their career because they've just gotten older, and so has their audience as well. And Toby Mac has been able to kind of keep that balance where he's kind of kept a youthful ear attentive to his music, but he's still, I think, has slowed down enough that us guys can still keep up with him for the most part.
Yeah, because I heard in an interview, James Hetfield from Metallica, he says that he sees granddad bringing their sons and grandsons and granddad. I mean, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard in my life. You know, just sharing, you know, pass on to generations, and, you know, that's more, you know, more than anybody can ask for, you know.
That's great. That's great.
So, you're, like I said, searching for Elvis has gotten beyond big screen locally, March 28th. And locally, by that, is that only in Virginia as of right now?
We had the screening here in Virginia already.
Okay.
Where your audience will be able to find it is it's Amazon Prime. They'll be able to go to Amazon Prime and type in Searching for the Elephant, and they can watch it there. Also, Tubi. That's the format that was the Super Bowl. Anybody who watched the Super Bowl in January now has Tubi.
And right. So, exactly.
Searching for the Elephant into Tubi, you will find it there. It's got commercials, but it's free if you want to watch it. Apple TV has it as well.
Yeah, Apple TV and Roku. And you can find any of our films just on crosspurposes.productions. That there we have all of our films, and you can click on where to find them. So that crosspurposes.productions, you can find all of our films.
Nice. Well, guys, we do honestly thank you for coming on, and we beg you to come back anytime you want to. We can talk more about music. And give me another four of your favorite bands, because I know they just changed just now. So
I'll do my homework. Yes, homework.
So we do honestly thank you, and like I said, you can come on anytime you want to, and we just thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you.
And, sure. And with that said, everybody, thank you so much for listening, and always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.